Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, colleagues, alumni, ladies and gentlemen. Honored guests, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome you and thank you for sharing with us this special occasion dedicated to the 25th anniversary of the establishment of the Department of Food Science and Agricultural Chemistry at McGill University. Today we have brought together internationally renowned speakers from the world of gastronomy and science in what is promising to be an exciting afternoon. The symposium is the result of the tremendous efforts of our undergraduate student society under the guidance of Professor Ashraf Ismail. Especially, I want to thank Bernice Ting, Jade Pruhl, and Sabrina Bergeron-Quiron, whose relentless efforts and long hours of tireless dedication made the events of this afternoon possible. This year also denotes the 24th anniversary of the birth of a new branch of the discipline of food science named molecular gastronomy. Our first distinguished speaker this afternoon, Professor Harvetis, played a critical role in its foundation. Molecular gastronomy was founded simply, and I'm quoting our distinguished guest, because food science has never dealt with cooking. It doesn't give a damn about soufflés and stews, unquote. Maxime Billet, however, our second speaker, does give a damn about cooking, stews, and soufflés, and he is the co-author of one of the most important cookbooks of recent times, The Modernist Cuisine, The Art and Science of Cooking. Today we may hear words like arts and science, gastronomy and cooking, beneficial and toxic, natural and synthetic. So we thought we needed the talents of Josh Schwartz to offer us a solution to this confusion. We are very pleased that our three distinguished speakers have accepted our invitation, and some of them have traveled long distances to be here today. Thank you very much. The department has graduated more than 2,000 students with degrees and specializations in various aspects of food chemistry, food biochemistry, food analysis, food processing, but not in cooking. We are very proud that how well our graduate and undergraduate students have performed in their various positions in the government, industry, and academia. We certainly extend our congratulations to them today at this occasion. Finally, I would like to wish you an enjoyable and informative afternoon, and I kindly invite Professor Frederik van der Voort, the founding chair of the Department of Food Science and Agricultural Chemistry, to give us his personal reflections on the discipline and on the department. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Dr. Yaldan, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and a special welcome to our speakers. I've been asked today to say a few words on this 25th anniversary, which also happens to coincide with my pending retirement, or in agricultural parlance, putting myself out to pasture. It has been more than an interesting 25 academic years at McGill, which has included, amongst other things, the privilege of starting a new food science program, a discipline which I consider as important as many of the more established ones we're all familiar with. When the department was formed in 1986, it was a time of upheaval and generational change. I was a newcomer to the faculty and certainly not on the short list to be the chair of a new department. Then serendipity intervened, and the newly appointed external chair unexpectedly declined the position, leaving the administration in the awkward position of having to make the best of a bad situation. I had been in the competition for the position, albeit with little hope of success, but I did have a plan. When the unexpected happened, it was executed with the chemists in the Department of Agricultural Chemistry and Physics and the food scientists in the School of Dietetics and Human Nutrition, unifying and implementing a strategy to develop a strong principles-based food science and chemistry program. The goal was to exceed the basic discipline accreditation standards, have a strong chemistry base, and to recruit 4 new staff. Each of the 9 founding members originated from a different country, and our motley crew surprised many over the years in delivering a very solid and integrated academic program, producing highly skilled and employable graduates. I have to credit everyone in the department for pulling together under difficult and unusual circumstances to develop a unique repertoire of courses, proactively recruit students, as well as setting up strong individual research programs. In short, we elevated ourselves from a non-entity in the discipline to one of the preeminent food science programs in North America through the quality of our academic program, carrying out original research, publishing, and attracting funding. Early on in the game, the joke was that our graduates flipped hamburgers for a living, and few could see a relationship between food and science. Of course, professionals know that food science is an unsung, essential discipline which the general public has little inkling or appreciation of. This relative obscurity undoubtedly limited our student enrollment to some degree, but in some ways it was a strength of our academic program as we filled an important professional niche without flooding the job market with our graduates or diluting the value of their degrees. Food science and society continue to evolve, with the public slowly but surely continuing to delegate food preparation to specialists. Just as it is now taken for granted that we do not produce our own food, we're heading for a time when preparing food will be more of a hobby than a daily chore. Processed or convenience foods, regardless of their at times negative connotation, give our society a strong competitive advantage over less developed countries and economies lacking the sophisticated food system and infrastructure that we have. Convenience foods allow us to invest our time more effectively, but at a psychological cost, which is in large part the sense of a lack of control over the basic necessity we're all familiar with. The latter is an ongoing concern for the consuming public, particularly in regard to quality, safety, given that food is such an essential and elemental component of daily life. Food processing and production on an industrial scale is a complex undertaking and is associated with very substantive dangers and responsibilities, especially in terms of safety. Thus, more than ever, we need professionals who understand the basic scientific principles associated with formulating and processing foods to ensure both its quality and safety, as well as to regulate the industry that produces it. This realization is sporadically brought into focus when something bad happens, like a listeria outbreak or melamine contamination of milk powder. But the good news is how infrequent such events actually are relative to the amount of food produced and consumed. In fact, you're likely to be more danger in your own kitchen. The safety and quality of our food supply is in large part attributable to the many food science professionals working in the food industry and for regulatory agencies, many of whom are graduates from our own and similar programs across the country. So my message today is that food science is a relevant and important discipline, not to be casually discounted as it was early on in its development. Now, 25 years later, we're in the process of entering the next generational cycle, except this time I'm at the other end of it, heading out the door. Even now, the department as a whole is thinking ahead and pulling together to implement a 5-year strategic transition plan to redirect our department's focus more towards food safety and quality. We're in the process of hiring new staff, and we have a new non-thesis food safety master's program slated to start this fall to complement our strong and well-established program. Thus, as I head off into the sunset, I'm confident that the future looks bright for food science with burgeoning opportunities for future graduates. Coming back to the here and now, we have here today most of our staff, our in-stream students who organized this, and many of our former graduates as well as members of the general public to help us celebrate. You will be treated to interesting presentations today by three well-known speakers invited by our very active students, speakers who will bring you their unique perspective on food and science. Looking back, the only regret that I have is that my fellow founding colleague, Dr. James Smith, who passed away in 2006 at about this time, is not here to share this day and event with us. Thank you, and have an enjoyable day.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Mesdames et messieurs, bon après-midi. My name is Jade Proux, and I am president of the McGill Food Science Student Association. In the name of everyone at FSA, it is my great pleasure to welcome you to the symposium celebrating 25 years of studies on how science helps provide high-quality, safe, and nutritious food to the greater number. I would like to point out that this event would not have been possible without the help of a number of people. The association has benefited from tremendous support from the department, the faculty, as well as from the McDonald Campus Student Society. We would also like to thank Peter Knox for the setup of the Centennial Center, Luciano Germani and his team for the audiovisuals, and Anna Duff, our precious partner at the Alumni Relations Office. This event is also the result of an amazing team of volunteers working under the supervision of Catherine Fortin-Dubé. We would like to sincerely thank them for their time and, most importantly, for their enthusiasm in making this event a reality and a success. Our vision for this occasion could not have been reality without the exceptional support from our sponsors, especially Nexus Distribution, Bariatrics Nutrition, and Brooker Limited. We are sincerely grateful for their contributions. Finally, I want to take the opportunity to personally thank our three distinguished speakers who gladly accepted it to visit us today. I am sure you are all now very impatient to hear them, and you shall not wait any longer, as I am pleased to introduce our first speaker, Dr. Hervitzis. So, to tell you a little bit more about our guest speaker, Hervitzis is a French chemist who works for the Institut National de la Recherche Agronomique at Agro-Paris-Tech in Paris. With the late Nicolas Curti, he coined the scientific term molecular and physical gastronomy in 1988, which he later shortened to molecular gastronomy. Graduated from the École supérieure de physique et de chimie de Paris, he obtained his PhD in 1995 from La Sorbonne under the title La gastronomie moléculaire et physique. Hervitzis also has a prominent career in scientific publishing. He has worked in collaboration with magazines such as Pour la Science, and he has written several books on molecular gastronomy, which can be understood by those who have little or no knowledge in chemistry. He is also affiliated with the Collège de France and the French Academy of Science. He is the creator of the Food Science and Culture Foundation, of which he is now the scientific director. His work has influenced chefs around the world and has redefined the way we think about gastronomy. The latest work by Hervitzis, in conjunction with Pierre Gagnère, has been the formation and promotion of note-by-note cuisine, a new application of science to the kitchen. We feel extremely privileged to have him with us today. Please join me in giving a warm welcome to Professor Hervitzis.
Can you open that? Okay. Can you hear me now? Does it work? Yes? Okay. So first, of course, thank you for the organizer and congratulations. We had a discussion before the meeting on what science is and what technology is and what technique is. And finally, 5 minutes ago, I decided to change my lecture because if it can be improved, it has to be improved. The big issue is that the word science is ambiguous. For example, a shoemaker has its own science. But this science does not mean philosophia naturalis. It's a knowledge, but not all knowledge are of the same kind. For example, a poet or an artist have a knowledge. Even a dog has a knowledge in a way, not the same kind. And the scientific knowledge is very, I mean, not the scientific knowledge, the philosophia naturalis knowledge is of a very difficult kind to explain. And then perhaps the best way is to make an experiment. So let's make a simple experiment. Let's begin with an egg. I assume that you can tell me what is the color of an egg white. What is the color? Yellow, yes. So an egg white is yellow, and this part is orange. So I don't understand why we call it egg white, because it's yellow. Anyway, first of all, let's imagine that you want to whip an egg. You have to whisk this one or this one. Which one should you prefer? Let's try. So I'm whipping the egg. I can see, or you can even see, air bubbles distributed in this liquid. It turns white because of the reflection of the white light on the walls of the egg. Okay. Now, if I'm using the other one, more or less it does the same, because indeed each thread is pushing some air. But you know, if I'm one thread, I'm pushing less air than when two. So indeed, which one should I choose? Probably the one with more iron threads. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So this one is probably preferred. But indeed, if you use both, it's better. Indeed, this is technology. The real world technology. Techné, you do something. Logos, you study. So you study and improve what you do. So this technology. By the way, I'm very proud to tell you that it's probably in Montreal, Canada, that you have the world record of the maximum volume of whipped egg white with one egg. The issue is the following. Imagine that you whip an egg, so this is technique, and now you produce an egg white, a firm egg white, you know. Oh, by the way, having a camera on this is not so exciting because you have all done that before thousands of times. Okay, so you whip the egg, it turns white, it gets firmer. Why? Okay. And finally, you have a foam, white foam. And now you have a small quantity of white foam. Okay. Why not more? So let's consider now technologically the question. If you, in this product, you have air bubbles, water, because an egg white is 90% water, and 10% proteins that are surrounding the air bubbles and trapping them in a way. So if you don't have more volume, it means that you miss something. You could miss air or water or proteins. But you know that if you have two eggs, you have twice the volume, which means that you are not missing air. So you miss probably water or protein. So I'm asking a vote. Who is voting for? We are asking water. Raise your hand, please. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay. Who is predicting we are missing proteins? 1, 2, 3, 4. Or about 10. Who is voting for I don't know? Okay. The other. So if we don't know, there is a big solution. Let's make a simple experiment. The simple experiment is to add water, of course. So you see, this is water. It could be orange juice, it could be stock, it could be coffee, it's water. So I'm now adding a drop of water with taste, or with flavor, as you would say. And then I'm whipping. Now, the real flavor of this is tomato, because the egg white has no flavor. But if I'm adding tomato to no flavor, it's tomato. Okay. Now the volume is bigger. By the way, what if I put some sugar? Oh, but I know the result. The result is that the sugar, sucrose, will dissolve in... will dissolve in water. So now I have the flavor of tomato plus sweetness. What about salt? You understand the question? I can add to that product anything. And I will add exactly on purpose what I want, because I'm not based on traditions, but on technology and innovation. So now let's whip and whip and whip and whip. Oh, by the way, what if, big issue, what if I'm adding some oil? This oil has no taste. I'm adding a small quantity of oils. Jade, could you come please to help me, because I need some help. So I'm not sure you are going to see, but don't worry. I'm adding oil. The oil is floating on the egg white. Now I'm cutting the oil droplets in two and two and two, and you don't see anything. Can you testify you don't see anything?
No.
Okay. Can you now add some oil slowly, drop by drop, by the way? So now we are making an emulsion. It was a foam. We are, go on. We are transforming a foam into a foamy emulsion. Okay. The taste is sugar, tomato juice, more, please. Okay. By the way, is it right that we should always whisk in the same direction? Let's try the other direction. So indeed, we don't care, because we understand perfectly that the main goal is, oh, by the way, we had a very funny product. Thank you very much. You could applaud Jade for the results. And this is the result, by the way. It's a pink product with sweet taste, with tomato taste. What if I cook it? Did you ever cook a mayonnaise? Because this is the equivalent of mayonnaise. So we can predict. Start. Now the microwave is energy, moving the water, heating the water, which means that after some time, much energy, the water will evaporate. If it evaporates, it swells. When it swells, 100 Celsius degree. I know that. Of course, at 100 Celsius, the protein of the egg white coagulates. So they should fix. Oh, it's quite slow. But perhaps I'm too impatient. But you know, these people gave me only 45 minutes. So, it's there. It is there. It is swollen. It is exactly as I predicted. By the way, I should stop 1 second. There is no science at that time. It is technology and technique. No science. Of course, there is science, such knowledge, but not Philosophia Naturalis, which was the name of science given by Michael Faraday or by Isaac Newton. Now, what if I take this product? Here it is. It was a new product when I invented it. The name of this product is G equal H minus TS. Yes, because imagine that you have it is very soft, very tender. The taste is tomato plus sugar. Okay. So this is G equal H minus TS. Imagine now that you go in the street. You ask to the people around, what about chemistry? And say, oh, chemistry, awful thing. You are going to poison us. There are poison, explosions, pollution. But if they eat that and say, wow, it's good, it means that they love chemistry, because G equals H minus TS is one of the best formula that we have in physical chemistry. So this is a G equal. By the way, this is not science. It is technology. It is wonderful. Technology is wonderful. Technology is doing the world. Technology means computer, microwave, cameras, everything, your laptop, your mobile. It is not science. It is different. And then the question is, what is science? So I have another experiment. Here it is. You remember that God gave us wine. Okay? And wine is a wonderful product. It is a product with much water and a lot of odor. Not aroma, but odor. Odor means that something is flowing out of the water, going into the air, going into your nose, and you have the bouquet. In French, we call it the bouquet. Okay. But let's call these things that go out molecules. Why not? These molecules, if they were soluble into water, like sugar, there would be no odor. Okay. And indeed, sugar in water has no odor, nothing. So, by the way, the big question in food technology and formulation, I'm happy that you said the word. Formulation means you have to do something. So formulation is technology. Imagine that this would be limonene or sotolone or 1-octanethriol, which is one of these wonderful compounds giving odor to food. How was it possible for God to put this compound into water? Because you know that if you pour the oil, it will float at the surface. Remember that God was very smart, or is very smart, sorry. And God invented at the same time ethylic alcohol. You know that ethylic can dissolve very easily. But what if I put some ethylic alcohol with the odor component, and then I pour it in water? Let's try. So I'm dissolving the essential oils in water, and now, waff! It means that you have billions of oil droplets dispersed into water. In my lab, we have such products for now 6 months, and it is very stable, which is crazy, because the oil droplets should float. They are less dense than water. And if you wait for some time, if you leave these products now as it is, after 1 or 2 hours, they will even go down. I don't understand. And this is why life is beautiful. Now, I have a real reason to go to the lab in the morning. I want to understand how is it possible that these oil droplets go down. By the way, where is the ethanol now? Is it inside the droplets? Is it at the surface? Is it in the liquid? Nobody knows. This is wonderful. There is no application. I don't care about cooking. I'm caring only about this question, where is the ethanol now? And now I'm ready to begin the lecture. Because indeed, things are clear. You have technique, you do something. So you when you cook, you're doing a technique. Or technology, you try to improve. Or science, and science means something different. So now we can begin with moving to the PowerPoint. The PowerPoint will explain, will try to explain things, and in particular, try to explain that molecular gastronomy is a scientific activity. Remember, for me, scientific means philosophia naturalis, not only knowledge. So scientists are people that are paid to walk in the world. They are paid quite poorly, but they are free to look at mechanisms of phenomena. The sky is blue. Why is the sky blue and not red? It could be yellow, it could be red. We don't care the application. We just walk in the world and ask, why is the sky blue? Why is there a mountain? We are paid for that. Wonderful. No application at all. This is science, philosophia naturalis. Now, I'm not saying that by myself. It is a lesson of all the great scientists of the past. Galilei said, first, prefer experiment. That experiment by itself is not science. Then, you have to know that the world is written in mathematical language. If you do an experiment alone, it's empiricism. It's not science. Then, you have to have the faith the faith, as English speakers say. That is difficult for me. You have to be confident that the world is written in scientific language. Otherwise, you are not doing science. Here is the idea of science. In the Middle Age, you had to go and try to read the book of God, which was nature. Now, as Einstein said, you want to lift a corner of the great veil. Okay? This is science, and indeed, molecular gastronomy is science. The method. There are not so many methods. Only one. You look at a phenomena, number one. Then you make a quantitative determination, number two. You have many data. You group them into laws, number three. Then you go to a theory, which means mechanisms, and then you try to refute. So scientists are crazy people, you imagine. They produce theories, and they try to refute them. And they are happy because the theories are wrong or insufficient. Okay? Of course, 20 or 30 years ago, I decided that I could apply that in the kitchen, sous soufflé, for example. A soufflé is rising. Why? This is a phenomenon. I don't want to make a soufflé. I want to understand why the soufflé is swelling. Okay? The method was applied exactly the same. Number one, you look at the mechanism as a phenomenon. Number two, you have a theory, air bubbles expand with heat. Okay. Number three, you apply the law of the gas expansion, and you calculate that it could explain 30% of increase. And a soufflé can be much bigger. So this theory was wrong. How was it wrong? We measure the temperature, the pressure inside the soufflé. It was in 1980. And finally, I discovered that soufflé swell because water evaporates. There will be no Nobel Prize for that, unfortunately. But now it means that if you measure the mass of a small soufflé, 100 grams, before cooking, after cooking, you lose 10 grams. 10 grams mean 10 liters of vapor. So if you are smart enough with a small soufflé product like this, you can make 10 liters. How? This would be application, and this is why I say, I stop there, it's not for me, it's for technologists. And these technologists are very important because they will make bigger soufflé. Okay. So in 1988, we created, here is Nicolas Curti, who was a wonderful Hungarian man, smaller than me, I was younger than today, no white hair. We were smiling, as again, drinking champagne, if possible, good food. By the way, molecular gastronomy. This is a big question for the head of the department. Because, you know, of course, it's wonderful that you have a food science department. But first of all, should not it be a food science and technology department? I'm not there to annoy them, but this is a big question, by the way. And by the way, why not a food science and molecular gastronomy department? Because if we begin now for 25 new years, let's move otherwise than being fossils. Okay. So, where is molecular gastronomy? Molecular gastronomy is not everything. It's a tiny part. You know, in this slide, you have two parts. Applications and science. Food science is not entirely physics and chemistry or biology. I forgot about biology, but the biology, I'm saying that it is more or less chemistry. No, I'm joking. It's just to annoy the biologists. So MG means molecular gastronomy. A tiny part, but it's true that 20 years from now on, there was no science about soufflé, coq au vin, pot au feu, poutine, and so on. Poutine, I'm not sure. But so one big question, what is food? What is food? Because you have a food science department, so we should ask what is food. Here we have, you have perhaps the feeling that all of these products are food. I'm saying no. Food is what we eat. We don't eat the carrots in the field. We eat these carrots. We eat the carrot salad, but not that product. Which means that in the middle, there is the important culinary transformation. And this is why molecular gastronomy is the best science of all, because you are focusing on the most important thing, except perhaps oncology, because I've seen the president of the Department of Oncology. Now, these pictures are fascinating. This is onions seen using MRI, magnetic resonance imaging. The pictures are crazy, because it is the same onion, the same machine, and so on, and so on. Don't care about the brightness, because I could correct the brightness using my computer. But look only at the white edge. You see here, you have a broad edge, and here you have a very thin one. Indeed, the onion on the left was cut with a scalpel. On the right, it was cut with a knife. And what you do when you cut, you do all these chemical processes, which means that you change the taste, the odor, the nutrition properties. And indeed, this is why I'm saying that molecular gastronomy, being in the middle, is so important. Because indeed, if we want to understand what we eat really, we have to focus on the culinary process. Okay. So now let's move to what we do at the lab. It becomes abstract, of course. But you see, bioactivity. Bioactivity, it means that if I'm eating something, this something has to have a flavor, an odor, a taste, trigeminal effect, consistencies, and so on. Otherwise, it's not food. But what it mean? It means that some odorant compounds can flow in, go into the nose. But it could be another compounds going into some receptors and perhaps to stimulate receptors in the body. So bioactivity is a common language to all sciences. And this is why there are no frontiers or barriers between sciences. I don't like the idea that biology is separated from physics and chemistry. There are sciences, philosophia, naturalists, not technology. So in the lab for many years, we study phenomena in the hope that we are going to discover something important. What? We don't know. We don't know because if we knew, it would be discovered. So people, scientists, are people that are paid poorly to move in the world without knowing what they are going to discover. And sometimes they don't discover anything, but there could be a strategy. Imagine that you go in a place where everybody was there before. The probability of finding a new thing is very low. But imagine that you go in this place where nobody was. Then there is a possibility which is increased, a probability not of a new dish, the probability of a new phenomenon that nobody envisioned before. And this is philosophia naturalis, and this is what we do at the lab. We study, for example, making carrot stalks. I don't care about carrot stalks. I hate carrot stalks. But indeed, we apply, number one, observe the phenomenon, make a carrot stalk. Number two, have a theory. In a carrot, you have the sap going up and down with sugar and amino acids. They are stored in the cells. So we have to test this theory. How can we test? And by the way, the theory would mean that the sap would flow into the stock. Okay? So carrot stock should be water, amino acids, and sugar. Okay? So we can make the modeling. Not very funny because we get the result of what we predicted. Sometimes, with easy techniques, you put a small plant tissue in methylene blue, and you see that there is some blue as predicted because the methylene blue can go inside the phloem and xylem, which are the channels. But there is some blue around. Why? We don't know. We don't know. We have ID. Of course, number three, we use NMR spectroscopy. Number four, we get spectra. Spectra means a lot of data that we have to analyze, the saccharides, the amino acids, some others. And we make laws. Remember, number four, we make laws. The laws are not enough. We have to go into theories. So we characterize the name, and we see chemical processes. But unfortunately, up to now, no discovery. So we can be very sad. Okay. So sometimes, because the world is written in mathematical language, we do that in the hope that the mathematics will not confirm the theory. So we have prediction, we have result. Sometimes, even during the course of this process, we make technology. For example, when I started this program, analyzing one sample using NMR spectroscopy took us 5 days. 5 days. It's long. But suddenly, I realized that plant tissues are gels. Indeed, even jade proof, Georges Jade proof, I don't know how you say, is a gel. Or even the chairman is a gel. Because what does a gel mean? A gel means a liquid trapped in a solid. You don't flow, which means that you are a gel because you are full of liquid. So any plant tissue or animal tissue is a gel. So if it is a gel, it means that using liquid NMR spectroscopy, we can apply. And now, in 10 minutes, no solvant, using a tiny strips of carrots, we get exactly the same result. 5 minutes against 5 days. Oh, life is even more beautiful than it was. So now, we have questions. When the stripes are dried, I don't know why the spectra are better. I don't understand. It's completely the contrary of what I thought. So I'm very happy. We observe more glucose than we had. Oh, this is a problem. We need calculation. This is a great joy. Now, we have to improve the models, but always, 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 always. And we do the same with carrot. I don't care about the greenness of green beans, but it is a phenomenon that changes the color. Why? Of course, there are chlorophylls, but not only. There are also they can change, but there are also carotenoids. Which are, you know, if you are a painter, in order to paint the plants, you need some red and some green, because otherwise the color would not fit. You need the red into the leaves, and in Canada, in the fall, you know, the wonderful colors are due to carotenoids, okay? So we studied this. By the way, in my lab, adjectives and adverbs are forbidden. They should be replaced by a quantitative determination. Green, what is green? There are many greens, so we have to determine quantitatively the greennesses of the green beans. We're using calculation, using histograms, regression, many confirmation, validation. You see, this is always quantitative, and for some people it's boring, but for scientists it's a pleasure. It has nothing to do with technology, but it is a pleasure. And finally, I'm moving to the next. Now, I'm leaving my lab. You know, scientists are people, you cannot speak to them, they don't care about you. They go in the world, they think about things. Where is a new phenomenon? Where is a new mechanism? Technology, we don't care. Technologists have to do their job, but it is an important job. And I'm saying that probably in a big country like Canada or France, the technologists are much more important than scientists. Scientists are people walking around trying to discover. So let's move to the applications of science. Please never use the expression applied sciences. It does not exist. If it is a science, it is not applied. If it is applied, it's technology. It's no longer science. I'm not saying it. It's Pasteur, it's Lavoisier, it's Isaac Newton, it's Faraday, it's all these big people. I'm a dwarf on the shoulder of giants as you are. So let's look at application. Now, I'm moving to this slide. In 1980, because I was cooking, I realized that all the tools in my lab could be useful in the kitchen. And then it was the definition of molecular cuisine or cooking. I don't know because I'm not an English speaker. You know, cooking or cuisine, I don't see really the difference, but some people do, so okay, why not? Indeed, it was needed because, you see, 50 years ago, today, in the kitchen, nothing changed. It is impossible to go on. So this was the proposal. We have to change our ways. And this is the definition of all new forms of cuisine, except one, I would say. Molecular cuisine, modernist cuisine, techno-emotional cuisine, and so on, and so on, and so on. New tools, new ingredients, new methods. Oh, new methods, excuse me. I said new tools again. Yes, because the methods and new tools, there is a big discussion. Anyway, if it is true that if you put a meat stock in the filtering apparatus, you get a clear stock in 5 seconds. So why clarifying with an egg white that you whip on? No. 5 seconds is done. So we need new tools. So this is molecular cuisine. And if you never had before, please be sure that it can be wonderful. So I'm getting very fast with a dinner. It was in Hong Kong, but it could have been in Montreal. So here is the chef. He has a siphon, new tool. Ah, he had a plate, bad choice. He has a menu, paper, waff, it could be an iPad. This is a dish called the mummy, the bird, then caviar, no caviar, of course, balancing meat. The chef is pouring water on the flowers. You could eat everything, even the pot. And the water was not water, it was a sauce. The pond, then under the sea, wonderful work because it was incredibly difficult to cook every pieces at a different time. Then you had to move to this one, I don't remember the name. I'm going down in my garden and the mist of the morning is disappearing. Very funny. Alaska meat, I don't remember the name. Bounty bar, open. Bed and breakfast. Apple. Making up, you could eat that. And finally, a big tree with a sweetness. So molecular cuisine is clearly wonderful because it gives you love, pleasure, art, and all these things. So it's important. But it is completely, now it is completely over because I propose new idea, abstract cuisine. The idea in painting, you have figurative painting. Suddenly, Kandinsky introduced non-figurative. You can do the same in the kitchen. And this is, to my knowledge, the first abstract dish of the history of cooking. This one was done by my friend Pierre Gagnère. And every month, for now 10 years, I'm using some scientific knowledge and trying to make an application. I should not, because I'm paid by the French government to be in the world walking around looking at phenomena. Anyway, of course it's easy. It's easy when you use science. For example, I show you just an example. Imagine that you have an egg. You call it number one. You know that there are parts. Number one, two, three, four, five, six. Now, you do something to this part. You add air, or you add heat, or you add an acid. It will make a recipe with a series of numbers. For example, here is the 116. It means that you take an egg, you put it into vodka or brandy, and you wait for 1 month. It is cooked. Wonderful taste if the brandy is good. It is called the 116. Of course, 116 will not sell well. So I had to give a name of a famous chemist of the past. It's a Baume. I invented it. I have the right to call it as I want. So it is a Baume. 117, you put an egg in acid. Okay. The shell is dissolving, but after one or two days, you have this result. And after 1 week, you have this one. It is a 117. Okay. But you know, the number of possibilities is infinite. So I will not spend much time in detailing all these things. Only some examples. For example, here is an egg at 61. It is not cooked. 64, there is a modification. 65, I prefer this one. 66, much better. 68, I love that. Because the yolk is like a pomade. You can model it, make a heart for the Valentine Day, for example. It's wonderful. 65, 75, 80, and so on. Now, of course, you can go back to all things, but they are reinvented. Okay? You have a formula, you have a dish. The dish can be new or old, and old, of course, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on. Now, chefs can make them and can make sometimes beautiful products. For example, here is the Gibbs. It is the G equals H minus T S. This is the Vocal. You see, it's boring now. It's boring because you can make new and new and new and new dishes, new food. There is worst. I propose that you, if you don't make it at McGill, that now you teach this formalism. This formalism is a way to, instead of giving the name emulsion, suspension, and so on, you give formula. And for example, there is the formula of mayonnaise. This is the formula of meat. This is the formula of chocolate. This is the formula of the foam of your espresso. This is the formula of a gelatin gel, a formula of a shallot, a formula, this is an artificial orange. Some people prefer plain food. Is it fake food? No, it's food because I eat it and I'm happy. By the way, it's much better than an orange because an orange, there are bags glued together with the orange juice inside. But here, I can season the orange juice. So it's much better. I can control the rigidity, the consistency. So it's much better. Artificial is much better than nature. Nature will kill you once in a life. So we can make many other things, many. So I have to be fast because, you know, these people ask me for speaking only 45 minutes. So, and generally, I'm trying to lecture for 4 days. So it's difficult. So I will not go into details in all these things. I cannot go into these details. But it is for free because it was paid by the French government. By the way, this is the main issue that I proposed to McGill because I proposed it all over the world. Imagine that you have a formula. Imagine that you make a dish, a real dish. This dish has properties, optical, odorant, and so on. Are we able to predict the properties from the formula? Probably someone will have to spend one life on that with much brain because it's a difficult question. But it is the real question of food science and technology. Can we predict the result instead of just doing it again and again with empiricism? And now there is much better than all this. Not all this stuff that was based on old ideas, Liebig, Nolle salad, which is an artificial salad, Kinsheim. So all this is wonderful. I will not spend time on this kind of meal. I know that it is important sometimes. I know that it can be very good if the chef was very talented. I know that it can be pleasant if it is done with love. We eat first love. When you throw a dish to your guests in the face of your side, eat, it's not good. When you say, oh, you see, this is a wonderful dish that I have done for you. Because I woke up this morning very early. I went to the market and I spent, this is for you. It means I love you. And indeed, cooking means I love you. It does not mean technique. It does not mean even art. It means I love you. And in my university, I'm saying that we have the duty to teach the I love you. Otherwise, we are not doing really our job. It is a difficult question, so probably we will need more than 25 years to introduce the I love you curriculum. Okay, razor chips, and so on. This is old. This is very old. I'm sorry to show that to you because it's old-fashioned. It's funny. And now, the next big one is called note-by-note cooking or cuisine. But I'm sorry to tell you that the time is over. And then I cannot explain, except if the chairman gives me some more minutes. The chairman gives me some more minutes? Okay. This is a big idea. When I say this is a big idea, I'm not saying that I'm smart. I'm not smart. I'm saying that this is perhaps the future of the humankind. You know that in front of us, we have 9 billion people to feed, and it's not a joke. We have an energy crisis, even in Canada with a lot of streams, and we have a question of water. How can we feed 9 billion people? By the way, there is another question. The farmers are quite poor. If they are poor, they cannot take care of their environment, which is our environment. And then their land is being contaminated with copper, with all these things, pesticides. And all. So we need a new idea. The idea is, I will tell you the story in a way. It began, my grandfather was having some plums called Mirabelle, wonderful product. And these plums he was distilling to make brandy, wonderful brandy. At that time, my grandfather was putting a stick of wood inside the barrel, but because instead of having the barrel outside, he had the barrel inside. Why was he doing so? He was doing so because indeed there is a chemical process between lignin from wood and ethanol. And when you do this process, you produce some products that are called ferulic acid, vanillic acid, and so on and so on. Indeed, at that time, when I knew that, I added in my brandy some cinnamon and some vanilla, because you have these products in cinnamon and vanilla. Okay. Here is one formula. And sometimes the result is very funny. For example, if you take a bottle of whiskey, poor whiskey, the cheapest, you add 6 drops of vanilla extract, and suddenly it is round. The mouth feel is very different. Why? Nobody knows. But at that time, I added also some 1-octane, parethylphenol in my whiskey, because the parethylphenol molecule is wonderful to give an earthy taste to your whiskey. The cost is almost zero. Probably one bottle of parethylphenol costs $10, and you have enough for 1,000 lives. Okay. And in 1984, in Scientific American, I wrote in this paper, I dream of the day when people will use compound to cook. And indeed, we are now at this step. We are using compounds to cook, not to add to food products, but to make food products. What does it mean? It means first cooking, so producing food. I love you. Which food? For millions of years, people eat meat and vegetable. But why? There is no real reason. Indeed, they need energy for their body to live, to exercise, and so on. But we don't care about meat and vegetable. We care about the products inside, the compounds. I know as a chemist that any carrot, any beef is a mixture of compounds. Compounds, water, amino acids, and so on. So this is an idea that is obvious for chefs. When they have a carrot, and the carrot is not sweet enough, they add some sugar. But then, let's generalize. We can make the food only from compounds. No plant tissue, no animal tissue. This is note by note, like a piano, note by note. Of course, the number of possibilities is incredibly much bigger. What is a compound? Big question. Well, water is a compound. Tartaric acid, wonderful acidity. Glucose, I love it. Glycerol, small quantity in wine gives unctuosity. Phenolics, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on. And so on. But now we have to build the food. Instead of being lazy with carrot and beef, now we have to take the empty plate and say, I need to make it full. And inside the dish, I need shapes, consistency, color, odor, all the particularities of food. We have to create food from scratch. Some of you are perhaps upset. I know that because I discussed that extensively up to now. You are probably upset. Say, wow, what does it mean? Synthetic food, fake food, what does it mean? But let me tell you first that it was, I pushed Pierre Gagnaire for 6 months. I helped him to create the first one. This was the first one. Now it is done. And since that time, there were many, many, many new dishes about note-by-note cuisine. For example, in Strasbourg, there were some. At Paris, we had one meal. Not all of that is note-by-note. There remain some Riol. I don't like the name Riol product, but here is a meal. A meal, it means that you have something in your plate. Unfortunately, they put a mushroom. There was no need, but they decided to put a mushroom. I don't know why. Unfortunately, they put a slice of asparagus. Why? I don't understand. Probably they sticked to tradition. Some basil or some raspberries. I don't understand why it was useless. This one has nothing except real node-by-node food. So it's not fake food. It's real node-by-node food. This one also. And more, and more. So people were smiling. They are playing. They are making new things for the new year of chemistry. We had a one. The name is complicated. How to give it a name? You cannot say beef plus carrot because there is no beef, no carrots. So this one was called the ID of an oyster. There was no oyster. This one was a soufflé big like this with a velour sauce. This one, on the right, it is real meat, awful real meat. On the left, it's a note by note. And finally, the dessert, unfortunately, they put some real stuff. And another. So you see, it can be sometimes wonderful. The taste is exactly what they wanted. This is the dessert. And we had more. Oh, no, this is not. It was cooked traditionally. This is a soufflé. And tomorrow, I'm very happy to tell you that two chefs, they are present here. Where are they? Ismail and Eric, they are there. They are two. These two guys accepted 1 or 2 months ago to work on a node-by-node project. And at the ETHQ tomorrow, they will serve some boucher that will, node-by-node, I love this picture. I know that it is one possibility for the future of food. And if you are in a food science and technology department, it means that you need to consider the possibility that this can be our future. So now, of course, I'm not selling anything. I'm not selling products. I'm not selling hardware. I'm not selling books. I'm not selling anything. I work for the French government to envision the future of our food, which means ourselves, we have to take care of children at school, to grown up, and for example, these people are educated in very poor part of France, and now it's sure that physical chemistry is wonderful, but we need a motto. Of course, this motto could be celebrate chemistry, but it could be also vive la gourmandise éclairée par la science et épaulée par la technologie avec art et amour.
For an exciting presentation. We are now open for questions for those interested, if you would like to step up to the mic in the center. Or if Dr. Viss has questions for the audience.
Are you happy? You know, generally at the session questions, there is no question, but afterwards people come and ask questions. So,
okay. I know some of you are shy. So there will be, after the conferences, you will get an opportunity to speak with each of our guest speakers today.